morning. This is Lance Kenmore. I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 396-0577 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how you been?
Finally feels like fall.
You know, it really does. Yeah. And in fact, I was saying to somebody, I was out at soccer practice picking my daughter up two nights ago. And I'm like, man, we have had beautiful weather in the fall. And I think she made a little fun of me. And she said, oh, for the whole 3 days, Lance, you know, but I always feel like fall starts September 1. But it seems like anyway, beautiful September. But you're right. A little bit of that early morning, a little chillier.
As soon as that sun goes down, I know, because Harley has her Colts grid kid football practice. As soon as that sun sets up there at Southridge, man, it's cold.
Yes, and I did think I saw the, you know, famous release of the pumpkin spice latte. So that, I mean, that's the
grocery stores have pumpkins out.
That's the new official sign of fall, according to Starbucks. So it's actually here for sure. Mr. Tom Coyne is here with Umpqua. Tom, how you been?
You know, I'm fantastic. I've been doing some fishing like so many other people out in the water. So it's that time of year, and I'm loving it.
Well, good. Well, thanks for coming in. We have a great topic to talk about today. There are some huge changes going on in the lending real estate world that are going to take effect in the next couple weeks. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Before we get to that, though, we always like to talk about our crazy national house story, House of the Week. And if you remember, a couple months ago, we talked about Dick Clark had a Flintstone house that he was selling. Well, it turns out that that did close and sell, but there's actually two Flintstone houses. And there is a house between San Francisco and the Silicon Valley that has actually, it is orange and purple domes. And it was built with, a lot of times you'll kind of find this in like pools and stuff, but it was built with like shotcrete, where they form it up with the metal frames and then spray the concrete on over it. So absolutely crazy, and these prices always just blow me away. We're looking at 2,700 square feet, and it is just over $4 million.
Wow.
So I'm not sure if I had my $4 million, if it would be towards a Flintstone house.
You know, I'm looking at this picture, Lance. I think this takes just the right buyer to want this.
I would say. Plus, I'm concerned, Tom, that we might have some appraisal issues. So I think
a lot of comparables out there.
I think we would need a cash buyer or potentially a lot of money down there for sure.
So Fred and Wilma had two homes.
Yes, apparently they had two homes that we did not know about. Now on to a story that might impact you more locally. In conjunction with that, we always like a local real estate story. And just an update this week, at a meeting, the Port of Kennewick decided to sell some land, some existing land that they own, to jumpstart the Vista Field development. So earlier in the week, Tri-City Herald had reported that the Port of Kennewick, they're hoping to raise $4.1 million. They're going to sell 8.5 acres that they own in Southridge, along with, if you've ever cut through that Vista Field area, they own a 9.9-acre piece that is the old Verizon property that was out there when you cut through there off of Deschutes. So they are going to be looking to get that sold, use that money. That's going to go towards some of the initial development in streets and a 3-acre public plaza that is part of the phase one development for Vista Fields.
So, and I hope that they run a road right through the middle of it, right through where the runways were, straight shot to the backside of the convention center.
Backside of the convention center.
I'm sure they've considered that.
So, yes, there has been a lot of that planning done, and it was great for them to get preliminary approval on that planning in that strategy meeting. So they are really moving forward with a lot of those plans there to really get that area started with the development. It's gonna kind of be really cool to see how it turns out. There could be a lot of very cool things done there. They even are talking about part of that development, a stream like waterway out there that would have shops and restaurants on it. They're kind of comparing it to the San Antonio type Riverwalk.
Oh, if it's even close to that, that would be so cool.
Yeah, I mean, if we could even get it, you know, 50% of that, McKay, I'm thinking, I'm thinking that would be.
They
very
always show
cool.
That when the that's our favorite team, the Spurs, and whenever they show San Antonio, you see those little boats, the gondolas that people go on. It's incredible.
Yeah, I've been there at a real estate conference before, and it is a great scene.
You know, this is exciting stuff in the Tri-Cities. I'm going to point out that I did go to Buffalo Wild Wings, and I am so happy they're in town.
It is.
Garlic wings were amazing.
That's the third real estate story I didn't have, Tom. That's why I love having you on the show, because, yes, that is very important real estate news there. And so, yes, I have not been yet, but my son has been bugging me to get over
there.
You got to
go. It was amazing.
Absolutely. So what are we talking about today for our topic? And there's some behind-the-scenes type of things that are going on in the real estate and lending industry that have some significant impacts for a lot of those companies in town and the type of business we're doing. So, and what that comes from is there are some new laws and regulations that are being implemented on October 3rd that dictate how people interact with their mortgage providers, some of the requirements for their loan, and the closing of their real estate transaction. And this is coming out of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So you might see people throwing around terms like CFPB. And how that came about, I just wanted to give, for those people that don't know how that organization came about, I wanted to give a little background of where this come from. We've talked about on the show, most people have known, and the lag time between crisis and new regulations sometimes is a long time. So this really has to go back to the beginning of 2007, and that's when we really started our financial crisis. Most call it the biggest one since the Great Depression. And what that had to deal with is that for decades, you know, in the United States, you know, we had had rising wages and growing savings in America. And then we started to get into kind of some wage stagnation with the wages kind of leveling out. At the same time, we had housing, healthcare, transportation, everything else increasing. So it started to push more families into debt. And then so what you have happening is in the early 2000s, you have increased debt levels mixed with widespread failures of, you know, what the government's saying, failures of consumer protection. And then we had some rapid growth of kind of unregulated, irresponsible lending practices. Anybody that's been in the real estate business that practiced, you know, from early 2000s through 06, 07, 08, and I was just right in the thick of it then, we all have those stories about the crazy loans that we saw. I mean, there were years when we were doing 80-20s, you know, and I think we were even doing 80-25s, which, yeah, if you do the math, that's more than 100%. Mm-hmm. And you're like, how's that possible? Well, they were lending 5% extra for repairs, plus the value of the property. I mean, I saw so much crazy stuff, even in the Tri-Cities, you know, and it was worse in the bigger markets. So,
you know, Lance, I remember a loan. It was called a NINA, no income, no asset. You put their name,
yeah,
their social,
I remember,
and their date of birth. There's nothing on the loan application at all.
You might as well have walked up to some lemonade stand and the guy would have handed you a bag of money. Here you go.
Yeah, no. And so, you're exactly right. Even the three of us here, we've seen those type of things happening. And so that led to some major, major issues. When this happened, then the trouble started to happen. People that weren't even caught up really in the crisis. Maybe they had normal credit scores and they had bought homes, but they had bought at the height, you know, to no fault of their own, really. Then they saw those home prices plummet when the neighbors' houses went into foreclosure. And it was just a chain reaction that started some major issues. In June of 2009, that's when President Obama proposed something to address the failures of the consumer protection, and that was by establishing a new financial agency. He then urged Congress to give the consumer agency the same accountability and independence that the other banking agencies had and sufficient funding to run it. So what happened then in 2010, July of 2010, Congress passed, and a lot of people have heard about it, and the most publicized name is the Dodd-Frank Reform and Consumer Protection Act. So this is what created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, consolidated most of financial protection into one place, and they're focused on that one goal, and that's, according to their website, that is watching out for American consumers in the market for consumer financial products and services. So because of that, they take a huge look at the real estate industry. What type of products have we been using in the real estate industry, and what are we going to do with those? And we've had in the past good faith estimates. We've had truth in lending documents. And then anybody that's ever bought or sold a house has seen what is called a HUD-1. And that is the normal form that debits and credits are issued at closing. And so we've been using that form since 1974 is when it was introduced. 41 years we've been using that form. And here in another couple days, that's all going to change. So when there's a standard form that's been used for 41 years and it changes, you're going to throw the industry into a little bit of tailspin. Modernization of forms, people that are not used to seeing that. And so there's a lot going on. What I'm going to do at this point, because so much of it has to do with the loan and the lending side, I'm going to turn it over to Tom Coyne here at Umpqua to talk about it. He's been through extensive training already on this, and get a little background on Tom. Before we go to our first break, just start us into the subject a little bit here. What are we looking at with these new rules?
Yeah, so these, like you said, all these changes go into effect on October 3rd, so that's going to be next week. And they originally slated to roll out a few months back. But I think the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau saw that they weren't ready, the lenders weren't ready, and it was rolled back. And fortunately, we had a little bit more time to get prepared for it. And now, these apply to all loan applications, all the rules we're going to go to, all loan applications after October 3rd. Now, when I say loan application, I want to talk about what is considered a loan application. Because going in and getting a pre-approval, say in September, doesn't necessarily constitute a loan application. So there's six data elements that are required to be considered an actual loan application. And that's the borrower's name, social security number, their monthly income, the estimated value on the property, the loan amount, and the subject property address. Now, I put the address at the end because if you're going in to get pre-approved, you don't have a property identified yet. So you just have a pre-approval and you haven't actually made a loan application. So as soon as you identify the property, that's your sixth data element, and now you have a true loan application. So if you went in and applied back in September, didn't have the home picked out yet, then you go back in, say, in 2 weeks after October 3rd, now you have a home picked out and you're under contract, you're going to fall into these new guidelines that will go into effect on October 3rd, because now you have all six pieces of those data elements. Now, Lance, you touched on it real briefly. There's four different forms that people currently get when they're applying for and closing a loan. And that is the good faith estimate, the initial truth in lending statement, the final truth in lending statement, and the HUD-1 settlement statement. So these are getting combined into two separate forms. The good faith estimate and the initial TIL, truth in lending, those are getting put into what's called a loan estimate. And then the final TIL and the HUD, again, going to the closing disclosure. So these forms have been around around for as long as I can remember, and I've been doing loans for 11, 12 years, and I didn't know that, but all the way back to the 70s is when the HUD has been around, so a long time. And when everyone calls for a quote, they always ask, can I get a good faith estimate? And so it's going to take a long time before people realize that the good faith estimate doesn't exist anymore, and now it's called a loan estimate. Now, when that good faith estimate was originally rolled out or revised, I will say, a few years back, and it was a part of the Dodd-Frank Act that you mentioned there, there was a lot of information that was missing from it. And my perspective on it was that they were rushing to get something out as a part of this reform that they had rolled out, and it lacked a lot of information. It didn't show, say, any of the credits that the borrower put into a transaction. Maybe they put earnest money down, or they had sellers paying some closing costs, or they had a lender credit or credits from anyone. So it didn't list any of the credits. It didn't tell them the amount of cash they need to come to closing with. So there, while there was some good information on it, I think the format wasn't laid out very well, and it just really raised more questions than it answered. And so it was, I knew when it came out that they're going to revise this at some point, and that day has now come. So what we generally went through was what was called a closing cost worksheet, because from my experience, what most people want to see is, what is my payment? What's my interest rate? How much do I need to come to closing with? Closing cost worksheet breaks down all those. The old good faith estimate didn't. So like I said, there's going to be a bit of a learning curve on going through these forms and transitioning those out. But yeah, we're ready for it and excited to see what the future holds. It'll be interesting.
Well, that sounds great, Tom. We're coming up on our first hard break here. When we come back from the break, let's go through those new forms a little bit and maybe touch on a few other things that are in there. I saw some things that were interesting, and one of the things I saw that was on there, we'll talk about after the break, and that is total loan interest. Scary number, what that means when we come back.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking today about some major changes about to take effect in the real estate and the lending industry. We're looking at Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, some of the new rules that they've released, and those are going into effect October 3rd. So Tom and I have both been in training the last couple weeks about these changes. We're looking at the impact that it's going to have on the consumer and on these transactions. Now, as we roll into the second set of the show, just a quick summary. There's a lot of details we might give, but I'll give you a few bullet points to start. We'll talk about some of the details, and then we'll wrap back up with that. Really, if you're just tuning in, what this means to the consumer is that bottom line bullet points that I wrote down is it's going to take a little bit longer to close, especially the next 2 to 3 months. There's going to be some frustrations in the industry. There's some overlap where some closings are going to be on old forms, some closings are going to be on new forms. There's also some gray areas. This is over a 1,000-page set of rules and regulations, and the companies, the lenders, and the agencies are trying to figure out exactly what this all means. So we're going to go into a few more details here, but what we're looking at basically for you is that some delays in the transactions and no longer having the ability to make last-minute changes. The rush to get loan docs from the lender, sign at escrow the same day, get your keys tomorrow. Tom's going to go over some timelines and stuff and changes. That old style of doing business is going away, and we're going to talk about the new style. So, Tom, back to you on some details with what's coming out of these rules and regulations.
Yeah, you know, so I see some good things in here, and the main ones are the consolidation of those forms that we talked about before the break, and instead of having four different forms, they're going to two, and they're pretty clear, and they use really plain English in explaining exactly what they're trying to say. So I think those are good things. But the challenges that we're going to see is, like you touched on, the timeline. So the loan estimate is what we are required to give within 3 days of having a loan application to the borrower. Now, what makes it hard for us on the loan estimate is that there are certain fees that are zero tolerance fees, meaning they cannot go up at all, and certain fees that are 10% tolerance fees. And I get it. The client says, well, yeah, you should be quoting accurate fees. There's so many different third parties in a transaction, and the lender is responsible for quoting those third party fees. So with this new laws rolling out, it's really important that we are quoting accurate fees. So from the time that we get a purchase and sale agreement, we're then going to be reaching out to these third parties, because now we have a contract. We provide that contract to them and say, okay, give us your title and escrow fees on this. Or maybe we have a duplex investment property in Othello. So now we got to go get a quote for an appraisal. Like, what's it going to cost to get this investment property duplex done out in Othello? And we need to get all these fees before we ever start the loan. So currently, let's say Lance's team sends over a contract. The client comes in and says, okay, I want to come sign my paperwork, lock my rate, and start the loan. Okay, great. We can do all that within hours. But now we're going to have to delay that process until we get all those fees in to make sure that when we quote that initial loan estimate, it's as accurate as possible. So best practice for myself and the loan officers that work at Umpqua is we're going to be requesting those title and escrow fee sheets and also getting bids for any other third-party services that we're going to have. Now, another thing that was pointed out to us by the CFPB and to Umpqua directly is that when they come in and audit our files, which they do regularly, they're going to want to check that you're not drastically overquoting fees. So what I try to do now, currently under the current guidelines, is just be conservative. I have a real good idea of what title and escrow fees are in town or what an appraisal is going to be. And I'll just estimate a little bit higher to be safe because I want the client to get the closing and it's less than what I told them. But if your files are found to be consistently overquoted, you can get penalized for that. So the goal of these changes are to just be accurate. And so we're going to have to take a little bit more time, maybe 1, 2, 3 days up front to round up those fees before we start the loan.
And I think so. And the theory behind that is they're trying to prevent what people saw when they decided to get a home and a loan versus what they see when they get to closing. So in the old days, it might be, oh yeah, an appraisal will be like $350. And then you get to closing and you see your closing statement and the appraisal is $550, $200 more than you thought. Well, you know, and so somebody along the way changed that, used somebody more expensive, appraiser raises fees. But then you're there, all your stuff's in the moving truck. There's a lot of pressure on the consumer to say, gosh, am I going to blow this all over $200? That's where the consumer was getting taken advantage of. So more responsibility put on Tom and the lending. But the theory is that you tell me this is what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So the closing disclosure, that is the document that you're going to get in the end. This is what replaces the old settlement statement that's been around for, like Lance said, 41 years. And this is where we're going to see more of an impact on timing. So after we clear final underwriting and we start preparing loan documents, my Dr. Awe team is going to issue this closing disclosure to the borrower. From the time they receive the closing disclosure, we're required to wait 3 business days before the client can go in and sign their loan documents. So if you've ever done a refinance on your home, you know there's a 3-day right of rescission. This is going to be similar to that, where we issue you to the closing disclosure, and then we wait 3 days, and then you can sign. So Lance touched on it where, you know, sometimes we'll get into a rush right at the end. We'll get docs out, client will sign, and we'll fund that same day. Those days are over, and we can't do that any longer. So what's nice, though, is that this is industry-wide, and it's just going to become the new way.
And like you touched on before the break, there are some really nice things about this new form. HUD ones were kind of foreign. If you didn't look at them every day and didn't look at debits and credits in those statements, there were some hard things that you really had to look for to get into to see the details. The new closing disclosure, as I've been over in the training and stuff, is made so that a person that doesn't do this every day can understand that. Literally, loan amount, a dollar amount. Then there's a question. Can this amount increase after closing? Yes or no? Pretty simple. No. Interest rate. Can it increase or change after closing? No. Is there a prepayment penalty? No. It really gets those 5 big questions. What's my loan amount? What's my rate? What's my payment? And can any of this change? And if you see any discrepancy there, you should be able to figure that out very quickly. And then as Tom mentioned before the break, at the very bottom, cash to close. How much money am I needing to bring to the closing table to close this transaction?
I like how they put the most important things right there at the front and center on the very first page of that.
So, yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about the requirements and the regulations and change, but as far as a form that is easy for the consumer to read and go through, I'm pretty excited about that. I think it will help clients have a better understanding.
Well, you know, and APR is something that we get a question on all the time. They say, wait. You know, I thought you said my interest rate, just using examples here, was 5%, but my APR says 5.5%. And these forms say APR, it lists it, and then it says, this is not the amount of interest you pay. So I like seeing some of these changes. Now, about that three-day wait, we do allow e-disclosures. So this is really important for clients to kind of get in the habit of learning how to get just more, a little bit more savvy with technology. And most people are perfectly capable of doing this. We see once in a great while that clients aren't comfortable with using internet, or they don't trust it, or they don't feel like it's secure for them. But most of the clients today, they're going to consent to receiving e-disclosures. Their initial documents come to them, emailed from us, and we set up a time to have them come in. They sign the majority of their stuff with us, and then the rest of it gets e-disclosed. When they receive that, they have the ability to go in and consent to receiving e-disclosures. We're going to try to make it just a norm that everyone goes on and consents to these e-disclosures. If they do, when we send this closing disclosure out, it'll automatically start that three-day process as soon as we send it. Now, if they don't consent to receive any disclosures, we're required to mail them the closing disclosure. Now, the law says that after 3 days of mailing it, it's considered to be received by the client. And then that will start the new three-day clock. So if you don't do e-disclosures and you don't consent to them, then you're looking at a six-day wait before you can even sign your loan documents. Now, one nice thing is, the moment that we get written confirmation that they've received it, i.e. they signed the closing disclosure, that will start that three-day window. So there is a way around that 6 days if you don't consent to e-disclosures by signing the form. But it's going to result in you maybe taking time off of work to come into our office, sign the form, and then we start that three-day wait. So we're going to do our best to have every client go in, consent to receiving those e-disclosures, and then that will start that three-day clock. Now, Lance, you might know more about this, but I heard that the National Association of Realtors expects that this could delay closings up to 15 days.
Yeah, and that's very accurate. That is what our industry is saying about those changes. We have started, we've been writing purchase and sale agreements for 30 to 45 day closes. We started, even though the loan applications we're taking now, we wanted to be prepared for those coming up and any other changes that might bog down the industry. So a little over 2 weeks ago, our team started, as a precaution, writing those purchase and sale agreements from 45 to 60 days instead of 30 to 45. Now, that's a big change. When someone's looking at a 30 and then they're looking at a 60, you know, that's a little bit longer closing. The seller's a little more nervous about that. Like I said, we don't expect massive disasters. We just expect some little delays as people get used to these new systems. I mean, we've not changed this in 41 years. So a lot of the progressive companies, Tom and myself and some of the title partners that we work at, I mean, we've been working on this for months in the background, but there's always just a little bit of hiccups and details there to work towards.
So. Yeah. You know, we're always trying to find the most efficient way to do everything we do. I mean, we want to get that loan closed as fast as possible, get the people into their home and move on to the next one. So I don't think we're going to have an impact of 15 days, but we're going to have to see. I do think that the days of rushing a loan through in 2 to 3 weeks, those are probably over. But again, the new norm will be, this is what we're dealing with. Now, in the coming weeks, I certainly recommend, like you just said, give some extra time when you're writing up those contracts, because there is going to be that overlap of pre-October 3rd applications and post-October 3rd applications. And there's not a lender in the United States that is going to be perfectly comfortable with this on October 4th because it's brand new. It's just rolling out. And when you're jumping back and forth between old guidelines and new guidelines until we're weeding those other ones out of the pipeline, there's going to be a transition period that it might be kind of bumpy and everyone's just feeling out, how is this all going to work? How's it going to look? So I think within a couple months, everything will kind of mellow out and it will become business as usual. And this will be the new norm. Overall, if you take away the added time that is mandated, it'd be nice if the client could say, you know what, I waived this 3-day wait, but you can't. Take away that 3 days, and I think all these changes are for the good.
Sounds great, Tom. Appreciate the information. Real quick, some new property on the market. 1255 Brentwood. This is a marquee home up in Hills West. 5-bedroom, 3-bath with an amazing, amazing panoramic river view. 4,160 square feet. Huge deck that overlooks the view. Kitchen that overlooks the Tri-City view. And that thing's coming in at $349,900. I mean, it's just iconic home when you see the pictures of this up on the hillside. For that square footage, that price, fantastic. Pick number two, 404 East 5th in Kennewick. This is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath Rambler with a basement. They've gone through and done new HVAC, new siding, tile floors, super large family room. This house is a large, large home for that area of Kennewick. 3,900 square feet, and that thing's priced at $159,900 with new siding and new HVAC. Fantastic property. And then pick number three, this is out in Rancho Riata. Great, great large home, 5-bedroom, 4-bath. This is 249 Sarah Road. Great mature landscaping, absolutely incredible neighborhood. Gorgeous hardwood floors, full tile backsplash in the kitchen, granite counters, and they redid the kitchen and did amazing large granite counters with breakfast bar, entertaining area. You've got the master bathroom that's been completely redone, heated tile floors, and that's coming in just under $400,000 for that square footage, $399,900. So, great new listings and property out there. Feel free to go to our website, kenmoreteam.com. Shoot us an inquiry to take a look at that. We went over a lot today. If you have any questions about any of these changes and how they'll affect your loan process, shoot Tom and I a message at kenmoreteam.com.
And we'll be right back here next week on News Talk 870.